the dance we call living and dying. In the valley of the city, in the belly of the lion. We work all week long, all week long. You can lose your soul in the concrete riverbeds, rolling with the flow of the current of the walking dead. 5 o'clock comes and you're a rolling stone. Days like these, we got nothing to sing about. Days like these, I don't know what I think about. Days like these, who would have known? Days like these, I got nothing to sing about. Days like these, I don't know what I think about. Days like these, who would have known? Listen to the rhythm of the pawn shop shorts. Got you falling off your hinges like that old screen porch. It's the interstate slipping in your pores. Yeah. You can ride the vein from the corner store to Amsterdam. You can lead the train from the courthouse to the Vatican. But Friday, she's a ghost, gonna slip right through your.
Maybe it's just me, but there's a couple scenes in there that hit a little bit close to home. A little bit close to home. You know, I would honestly say that I have wrestled with this approval thing all of my life. And in this journey home, what we're going to see is there's kind of a turning point that we're invited to take today. And I'm hoping that for many of us, it is a turning point that we take as we kind of explore this idea a bit further of what does it look like to begin to turn toward home. You know, the first week of this journey, we basically said there is a problem. There's a problem we all have. It's a common condition, and it's the condition of feeling like we don't live at home, feeling like orphans. In fact, let me just stop there and say there's a couple people who may not feel at home right now because they're like, who is this guy talking to me? So I'm Chuck Mingo, and I want to say hello to friends in Mason and in Florence. Some of you maybe are new, haven't seen me here before. Our senior pastor, Brian Tome, every now and then he'll take a week off, and when he does, typically you'll hear from me or maybe you'll hear from other people. I'm one of the pastors at our Oakley campus, and it's just great to be with you guys. And you know, this idea of feeling like an orphan is something that I personally can identify with. We just feel like we're not at home. We feel like maybe we have to measure up in certain situations. Maybe we feel unapproved of, and so we're trying to fill that gap in different places in our lives. And what we said is, while we all have that problem, it's a default human condition, it's spiritual in nature, It actually goes back to the very first story of human beings and their relationship with God, Adam and Eve, that there's also this promise that God really sets himself up in Scripture as a father who is inviting his children back home. And so we want to go on that journey together, so that's what we've been doing. And last week we said really a big part of beginning the journey is recognizing the places in our life where we have misconceptions or misperceptions about God. Things that maybe aren't true about God, but that we've believed to be true. And this week is really, if last week was about knowing God as Father and knowing your dad, then this week is really about trusting him. Because what I found is this whole thing of approval really boils down to a question. Will I trust God? Will I trust God to be who he says he is? And will I trust what he says about me when I'm in relationship with him? So that's where we're going today. Let's pray. God, I do ask that you would just show us more of your Father's heart. And as we see it today through the life of Jesus and through personal experiences and examples, God, show us the places where maybe we don't have that trust for you. But I also pray that today you would build that trust in us, that you would literally breathe faith into us to believe who you say we are and to let that be our primary identity. And I pray this in the name of the Son that you sent to be our example and to be our rescue. In Jesus' name, amen. So last week, we talked about the best day of Jesus' life. Brian described it that way. I think it's a great description. Jesus, when he was 30 years old, was baptized. And when he was baptized in this very public setting, we see that the heavens opened up and there was this supernatural experience of God, and the voice of God the Father spoke words over Jesus. These are the words that he said to him. He said, "You are my son whom I love, and with you I am well pleased." And we said, that was a pretty darn good day. I don't know about you, but if I'm walking along between here and my car and the clouds open up and I hear the voice of God say to me, "You are my son," first of all, I might pass out. But secondarily, man, that's a good day. That's a good day. And so Jesus got this affirmation, this public affirmation from his Father about what his identity actually was. And right after that, he entered into what was probably his worst days. Not so much the first of those days where he was fasting, went without food and was interacting with the Father. That probably was a pretty good thing, although he was physically weak. But at the end of that, he was tempted three times. Basically, this character in the story, Satan, is actually a literal spiritual being. And that spiritual being was the one that confronted Jesus in the wilderness and basically made three assaults on his character. Every time he tempted Jesus, he started it with the words, "If you really are the Son of God, are you sure you're the Son of God?" He was trying to get Jesus to doubt his identity, and he was trying to get Jesus, therefore, to find his identity in either appetite, going after what he wanted, regardless of what God wanted for him, ambition, striving for power as the way to gain worth and value in the world, or approval. And particularly the one of approval is the one we're going to dive into today. But what we need to know is the MO that we see in the wilderness, the way that Satan tries to attack Jesus' identity, it's the same way he tries to attack our identity. We have an enemy, and the enemy wants to keep us from home. And in fact, later on in the Bible, Satan is actually referred to specifically as an accuser, as someone who assaults the identity of God's children. This is what it says in Revelation 10:12. It says, "For the accuser of our brothers and sisters, who accuses them before our God day and night, has been hurled down." This is referring to a time yet to come in the story of God and future history where a voice of the accuser will finally be silenced. But what we get in this verse and what we see in the wilderness is how he operates today. And the way he operates today, the enemy, the accuser, is he continually assaults our identity and wants us to believe that we cannot come home, that we can't be children of God, that we are orphans, that we are not cared for by God. And yet Jesus was able to overcome the accuser, and he comes out of the wilderness, he comes out of that temptation even stronger than when he went in. Luke 4 says this, "Jesus returned to Galilee in the power of the Spirit, and news about him spread through the whole countryside." You know, there's certain parts of the Bible that when I'm listening to them, I get a soundtrack in my mind. The words, the music I hear when I read Luke 4:14 is actually the theme from Shaft. I just imagine Jesus coming out of the wilderness like, like he is ready, he is on. He is on. He has this power. And the question is, what is the power he had? And I believe it was this. I believe one of the aspects of the Spirit's power that was working with Jesus is the power that comes when you are living from approval instead of for approval. I think that was a very clear, distinctive thing, because we just see in Jesus this clarity of mission. We see in every situation where he doesn't seem to care necessarily what people think. He's all about pleasing his Father, and he knows his identity in the Father. He has a power because he's living from approval instead of for approval. And you got to ask the question, when God spoke to Jesus at his baptism and said, "You are my son who I love, with you I am well pleased," was that the first time Jesus like came to that realization? He was 30 years old at this point. Like, did he not know that before? Of course he did. We see a story from his life when he was 12 where he says to his earthly parents, Mary and Joseph, "Well, didn't you know I need to be about my Father's business?" He already knew who he was. But what Jesus got at that baptism is an experience from the Father of his status as a son. You know, when I go home at the end of a workday, when I open my door, there are two screaming voices that I hear right away. It's my two boys. And when I come home, I hear, "Daddy, Daddy, it's Daddy." It's my 4-year-old, and my 15-month-old can't necessarily say Daddy. So he's just, "Dada, dada, dada." You know, like, and I come home to that every day, and it is awesome. You know what? I take off my bag, I take off my shoes, I go in the basement in our family room, and I pick those boys up and I hug them close. Like, they love that. And I love it too. It's like the highlight of their day. And I was thinking about this as it relates to what God did for Jesus. And it's like this. Like, my sons, when I hug them, are they now more of my son when I hug them than when I'm not hugging them? Are they somehow less of my sons when I'm at my office at Crossroads? Of course not. Of course not. But what's happening is when I come home and I pick them up and I hug them, they're experiencing their sonship. They're experiencing the status that is always true, the status that they constantly enjoy. But they're experiencing it. And I want you to know, Jesus experienced this kind of approval, this status of being the beloved son with whom God was pleased on a regular basis because of the power of the Spirit that was working in his life. And because of that, he lived from approval and not for approval. And I believe it's possible for us to live the same way. But we got to start by confronting the brutal facts. So are you living from approval right now, or are you living for approval? Let me give you some ways to maybe find out in your life if you may struggle with this approval thing. Maybe it's, think about your friendships. Think about the circle of friends you have. If you were to buy a new car, how important would it be for your friends to approve of that new car, to comment about what you're driving? How important would that be to you? Or maybe here's a way to think about it. You know, you're the first in your circle of friends to check out the new restaurant, or you're the first to go on this great vacation. How quickly do you make sure you put a picture up on Facebook so other people can like it? I mean, just think about that. Like, is that something in you? Like, man, you want to be seen in the right places and doing the right things. I mean, if you do, you may struggle with living for approval. Maybe it's stuff. Maybe it's stuff. You know, how easy is it for you not to upgrade? To not upgrade your house, to not upgrade your phone, and not upgrade your car, whatever it may be. Hey, are you the kind of person who knows what everybody else in your circle of friends has? You know what status phone they have? You know what car they're driving? Like, are you struggle with that? I felt really clean on this until somebody asked me, "Well, what about this? Do you know the make and model of all your friends' motorcycles?" Yeah, I do. And I have to confess that I every weekend at Crossroads in Oakley, I covet. I covet motorcycles. If I wasn't a pastor, I might steal some of your motorcycles. I'm just going to tell you the truth. And I thought it was bad here, and then I went down to Florence. They have even cooler bikes down in Florence. Y'all got some cool bikes in Florence, I'm telling you right now. So like, it's just that thing, though. But like, what is that in me that has to have the newest and the best of everything? Think about relationships. How important is it for you to be dating someone who is hot? Maybe that's the wrong question. How important for you is it that your friends think your date is hot? Maybe you're in a marriage and you're giving gifts to your spouse. How important is it that the response is the correct response? You know, not just a general thank you, but I'm looking for the thank you. Like, I'm looking for something specific. Like, these are just places in our life where we might wrestle with this. You know, I'll give you one that's way out in left field. I know nobody in here struggles with this one. Maybe you find yourself going to www.hamiltoncountyauditors.org to find out what other people paid for their house. I know some of you have never heard of that website. Again, it's www.hamiltoncountyauditors.org. And I know in Mason and in Florence, you got the same thing with your county auditor's website. Like, these are all signs and symptoms that maybe we struggle with approval. Because the truth is, if you live for approval, you never feel secure. You always feel abandoned. You wonder if this is going to be the time when people walk away. And man, failure is a death sentence. But there is this place of living for approval, a place where you can live in confidence, a place where you can feel like you belong, and a place where you are free to make aggressive mistakes. And the question is, where do we want to live? And how do we get there? I'll just tell you, this for me has been a journey that I've been on for a couple years now, and some unique things have accelerated my ability to live at home. I'm not perfect on this, but I've definitely taken ground in this area. And it started with really being honest about where I was starting from. So go ahead and break out your program again or break out your guide and turn to page 45. And we're just going to, again, walk through some of these prompts. These prompts are helpful for us to see maybe the places in our life where we don't feel at home, where we wrestle with things, so that we can invite God to show us more about who he is in those areas. So first, I'll just share the first box on page 44, because it really came out of a unique insight for me. So for me, I would say I like to be seen as the smart, likable, nice, powerful guy. Like, that's what I want to be. And when I was in college, I got a nickname that really summarized all that for me. If you went to your group the first week, you remember everybody broke out a name tag and you put your nickname on there. And my nickname in my group was Senator Mingo. Senator Mingo. And that was a nickname I got in college from my friend Dwayne, when one day as we were walking through the campus, he just was like, man, dude, you know everybody on campus. You're shaking hands, you're hugging moms, you're kissing babies. I mean, like, you just know everybody. I'm going to start calling you Senator Mingo. And I'll just tell you, as an approval addict, when it came to the name Senator Mingo, I approved that message. I'm just going to tell you right, I approved that message. And I wanted to live out of that place. And I just realized, man, this stirred up something in me. And so the questions on page 45 begin to be pretty revealing as I dug a little bit deeper into this. I just want to ask you the first three. And I'd like for you, again, to put the first name that comes to mind. You don't have to put the same name for all these. Could be different people. Could be the same person. But I want you to just think about who you seek approval from. So the first question is this, or first statement. I want blank to know that I'm good enough. Who is it that you really care about their accolades or their approval, that they believe you're good enough? Go ahead and write down the first name that comes to mind. Second statement is, I have a really hard time if blank criticizes me. Who is that for you? With their criticism, it just hurts. It hurts more than others. Third statement, I feel good when I impress blank. Who are you trying to please? Whose praise are you really hungry for? I encourage you to continue to think through those questions, continue to write some names in there, because what I found is, if I'm honest about those things, it's really a healthy place to start. So I want to be honest, and I want to tell you, for me, I can easily put one name for all of the three blanks that we just read, and it's Brian Tome. I'm serious. I mean, Brian is an authority in my life from an organizational standpoint, from a spiritual standpoint. And I came to this discovery as I went through the challenge of writing down that name. And I just started to realize, man, I could put him in all of these blanks. What is that about? And what I realized is, when I was growing up, I grew up in a family where I was the baby of five. And in my family at the time, two of my siblings were struggling very seriously with drug addiction. And so what I got to see is what it looked like to bring shame to the family through their story. And I saw what it was like when your parents were ashamed to talk about where their son or their daughter was or what they were doing. And I really struggled with that as their sibling. And what that did for me, though, is it taught me, okay, here's what I need to be. I need to be the good kid in the family. Because when I behave according to the rules, I get praise. So I learned very quickly that, well, the way to get love, the way to get approval is you perform, you behave well. And I'm not saying it was all inauthentic, but I got really good at being a good rule follower. I was the good kid. I was the smart kid. I always wanted to be that because I got praised for being that. And what I realized as I was walking through these exercises, you know what? I've just applied that same principle to every other authority figure once I left my house. So when I was working at P&G, I could have easily put every boss's name in those blanks. And, you know, when I was on a team doing anything, I could put whatever the leader's name was on that blank. I mean, this is true. This has been true to a certain degree in my marriage. And I just realized, like, that's true for me in all of these contexts. There's something there for me to uncover and discover. And I just realized, like, man, you know, I struggle with approval. I struggle with this. And I'm going to tell you what, you can live a pretty good life as an orphan. You can live a pretty good life if you struggle with approval and you keep performing. Like, stuff can come your way that feels like success, and things can come your way that feel like you're accomplishing, but man, it's just all coming from an unhealthy, unsustainable place. And what I had to realize is, you know what? I'm really a slave to the people I'm trying to seek approval from. And I'm a slave with a specific value equation. Let me show you my orphan. I call it my orphan value equation. Is that my worth equals my performance plus other people's opinions. I encourage you to think about, what is your value equation? Because this was mine. And I guarantee you, whatever it is for you, you've learned how to score points on it. The only thing is, it comes with certain side effects. For me, one of the side effects of having this orphan value equation is this constant insecurity, this inner struggle. There's almost like an inner voice in me that I wrestle with in every situation, because there's a voice in me that wants to drive me towards striving for approval. So, give you an example. A couple minutes ago when I shared about Brian, and I thought about that. Like, should I share that this weekend or not? Like, that's really vulnerable, and what will people think about me? But let me tell you, as much as I was processing that, there was a voice in my head telling me exactly what I needed to do, and that voice was saying this. Can you just told thousands of people that you suck up to Brian Tone. Are you crazy? What are people going to think about you? They're going to think you're weak. They're going to think you're insecure. They're going to think you are crazy. What? I can't believe you just said that. Did you hear that? I mean, that thing is just so prevalent in me. And it works the other way, too. So the orphan value equation, I've shared that in other settings. And people have said, man, that's been really helpful for me to understand what this whole idea of being an orphan is. Like, I can relate to that. And I'm telling you, that voice in me gets puffed up when I hear things like that. And I hear it say this.
Now, that value equation, now that's some good stuff right there. You know, this week people are going to be posting that on Facebook. Chuck, people will be posting your best ideas on Facebook. Let's do more of that. Let's do more of that, because that's how you get approval. That's what it means to be worthy.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. Oh, I'm sorry. No. I mean, like, it's real. It's real. I could be sitting in meetings, and one of the things I always struggle with is I want to be the smartest person in the room. I want to be the person who comes with the brilliant idea. And when I'm not, you know, instead of me just saying, okay, whatever, like somebody else had a better idea, no. That voice in me takes it to a whole other place, and I hear this.
That was the dumbest thing you've ever said. I can't believe you gave that dumb idea. Why didn't you think of that one? That's a good idea. See, somebody in here is thinking and somebody isn't. And the person who isn't, their name is Chuck Mingo. Let's get on the ball. These people are going to think you're not worthy. You need to earn your keep.
I am so mean to myself. No, seriously, like, that voice is real in me. Am I the only person that wrestles with that? Do you hear that voice? Hopefully you don't hear my voice, but you hear your version of that. And you know what? I realize that voice, there's a part of it that's just my brokenness. I admit, there's a part of it that's my brokenness. It's what I learned. It's kind of the learned behavior thing. But there's also a part of that voice that is not actually coming from me. It's coming from the voice of the accuser. It's the same voice that Jesus heard in the wilderness saying, are you sure you're the Son of God? And I just know we got to stop listening to that voice if we're ever going to take ground on this. And see, there are other ways to resolve it, or so we think. Like, one of the ways you might think to resolve it is, well, you just need to change your environment. You just need to get a different environment, get a different set of friends. And perhaps you've tried that. You know, I did that. I actually left the place that drove me probably most significantly to strive for approval, which was my work environment. When I worked for P&G, I was very, very much an approval addict, and I struggled with that and that culture and that context. And not because of that, but in the midst of that, I wound up leaving P&G and coming to take a job at Crossroads. Really was a calling for me. And I got to tell you, when I started working in a church, man, I got a different value equation. I mean, in some ways, it was like, oh, okay, this is great. Things are solved. I had a very different value equation. Let me show you my Crossroads value equation. It was this. My worth equals my performance plus other people's opinions of it. Yeah, it was the same one. It was the same one. And I was really convicted when I found verses like this in the Bible. In John 12, it says, for they loved human praise more than the praise of God. Let me just tell you, the opportunity to speak to thousands of people, when I do that on a weekend, I'm totally susceptible to that. Totally susceptible to that. But you know what? I don't have to live that way. And you don't have to live that way. You don't have to live for approval. You can live from approval. There's hope. And a big part of that is receiving and trusting what Dad says about you. So we're going to take a listen to a story of a guy who really kind of went through that journey of understanding who God says that he is, and he talks about how it changed his life. I want you to hear Mike's story.
My parents got divorced when I was 8 years old, and my brother summarizes it really well when he said that we were a fighting household, all of us. Just a very explosive environment with mom and dad. I only saw my dad like four times out of the month. So 4 days out of the month, I would see my dad. And what I learned from that was it was a very carnival-like experience. We'd go to dad's house, there'd be food, there'd be movies, there'd be sports. It was just like I didn't realize this until, you know, now, but it was like a weekend-long binge. Dad didn't role model God for me. He was emotionally silent when it came to God. He didn't affirm me the way that I wanted to be affirmed. You know, he would buy me toys and things as his, way to show his love to me, but I didn't want to be loved like that. I wanted to be loved in a different way. I wanted to be told that I was good. I wanted to be told that, I was worthy of his love. I wanted to be hugged, I didn't necessarily want to be bought. Now, on the other hand, my mom, it was very much a performance relationship. I guess transactionalism, if you will. You do this, you get that. You perform this way, you get that. And even my church experiences growing up were very transactional and performance-based. What I learned from all that from mom and dad really is this kind of unhealthy cycle of, performance to get approval, and then with, when I would come up short, which was a lot, having this appetite to soothe away that pain. And that appetite was fulfilled at my dad's house. Fast forward 10 years, and now I am, married, got kids. But my relationship with my mom and my dad and relationship with God was more or less unchanged. I'm still trying to win their approval. I'm still trying to earn their acceptance of me being the baby, and I've got these greatly successful older siblings. And my relationship with God, although it was a personal relationship, it wasn't a thriving relationship. It had grown somewhat stagnant. Eventually got into a rhythm of being in community with other people, and that was awesome. And my relationship with God began to flourish even more because I was in community with others who are in Christ. And that began to reveal to me different shades of who God was through other people in Christ, which is really cool. Came to a conflict that I was having with my wife. We were having a disagreement on a family issue. It was one of those moments where you really had to work through this. And it was a hard moment for me because, having seen how my parents role modeled conflict, it was role modeled with divorce. It was the end. So there's a lot of fear there. And came to realize my motivations were unhealthy. And they were founded in my trying to continue to seek and win the approval of my parents. So I was able to take a step back and recognize that this is now starting to impact my marriage, and I don't want that. So at the same time, we had been learning some things in one of our community groups about forgiveness, and I knew it was time to start taking some ground in forgiveness. So I wanted to relook at my relationship with my dad and evaluate, what that was. I knew that with this whole mindset of forgiveness that I wasn't going to be able to resolve any approval-seeking behaviors that I had with my dad until I was able to uproot the pain that he had caused me and forgiven him. So this is a really grueling and hard process just to really face a lot of the ways that he had harmed me in my life. The thing that I'd learned when it comes to forgiveness, though, you got to bring Christ into it and you got to empathize with the other person's situation. So I took some time to really think through, like, what was dad going through in all of this? What was his story being brought up as a child? He was the fifth of six kids. He was, his dad was 50 years old when he was born. His dad was emotionally silent, especially when it came to God. So when I reflected on that, that started to give me some, and open up some compassion. And as I empathized his situation, I was able to see that he wasn't intentionally trying to harm me the way that I received the harm. He wasn't intentionally trying to not role model a relationship with God. That's all he knew. He wasn't intentionally trying to love me in a way that I didn't want to receive. That was the way that he wasn't loved. You know, his father was brought up in the Great Depression, and he never got any gifts from his dad, and he was lavishing me with love, with gifts. He didn't know that wasn't the way I personally received love. Same thing with God. You know, when I was going through my you know, ways that I felt like God had harmed me in my life, I realized that during these traumatic moments where I was in pain, he was grieving with me, that this was not his design. And what I saw that kind of gave me hope is that he shaped and made good things come out of the brokenness. A lot of the brokenness that I have in my life is a source of my strength now today, in my work, also in building into others too, because I can share those experiences with people. Being able to focus on the gratitudes or the hope on the other side of all this, I was able to see that he has made good things come of it. And even the process of, you know, venting out some of my anger at God, like in the midst of venting out my anger at God, he was healing situations like right then and there. And so more than anything else, it is a rescuing in the midst of a storm and a deep calm and a deep peace more than anything else. But it's absolutely a challenge to receive and to, you know, to be rescued, to actually grab the lifesaver that's right in front of you. It's still a challenge.
Man, that's an honest guy with an honest story. And I love what he said about when you actually begin to take ground on this, it's like being rescued in the midst of a storm. But you've got to receive it. You've got to receive it. And I want you to know that that journey of receiving for me is really the journey of faith. It's this. It's receiving and believing what the Father says about you over and above what the accuser says about you. It's a journey of faith. It's a journey of faith. And I'll tell you a moment. There's a string of things that have really changed me on this, but there's a particular moment that comes to mind when I realized how much I don't really believe what God says about me and what it would look like and feel like to believe it. I was reading the story that we talked about earlier when Jesus got baptized. And I was reading it, and I had read it many times before, and I came across those words, "You are my son who I love, and with you I am well pleased." And I was down in my family room, in the same place where I pick up my boys and hug them when I come home. And it was almost like God came and sat down on the couch and said, "I want you to actually believe what you're reading. I want you to know, Chuck, that the day that you gave your life to my son Jesus, the day that you surrendered your life, what I say about Jesus here is what I think about you. Chuck, you are my son whom I love, and with you I am well pleased. Not because you've earned it, not because you could earn it, but simply because you've placed your trust in my son. I love you, and I am pleased with you." And man, if I could believe that over and above the voice of the accuser, I would never really have to wrestle with this approval thing. And I'm just telling you, that is what God invites you into. I call it the gospel of adoption. It's the gospel of adoption. The good news is what that word gospel means. And I want to share with you the gospel of adoption, because this is the way that I have seen enables me to live from approval instead of for approval. You know, it might sound like I'm kind of giving some spiritual mumbo jumbo or some things that may or may not be true, but listen to this. In our society, there is a group of people who, because of the benevolent act of another person, their identity gets changed permanently and completely, and they literally, in that moment, become part of a new family. They're called adopted children. Think about an adopted child, or if you've adopted a child, basically what you did is you saw that child and you said, "You are my son. You are my daughter who I love, and with you I am pleased." And then you went and rescued that child from whatever situation they were in, and you brought them into your family. And that's exactly what God has done for you and me through Jesus. It's exactly what he's done for us. It's the gospel of adoption. And in the book of Galatians, a letter written to the early church, it describes it this way. It says, "But when the set time had fully come, God sent his son, born of a woman, born under the law, to redeem those under the law that we might receive adoption to sonship." If you ever want to know what you're worth, if you ever want to know what God thinks about you, look no further than the cross. where Jesus died, because the cross is God's clearest and loudest statement to all of us that you are children that he wants to rescue, that God is in fact a father who is fighting for the custody of his children. He wants to adopt you, and we see on the cross that Jesus paid for your adoption. That word redemption means to pay for something at cost. And when Jesus died, he didn't just pay for the debt of your sin. You may have understood that or heard that before. That is absolutely true. But he also paid for your adoption, because the cost of an adoption is never on the back of the orphan child. It's always and only the parent who pays the expense and says to that child, that son or daughter, you're my son, whom I love, and with you I am well pleased. And here's the powerful thing. When you are adopted, when you receive that adoption, your status changes in that very moment. This isn't only about something you get when you die, but right now, when you receive the adoption that God has paid for through Jesus, you become a treasure child. And God says to you the same words he said to Jesus, you are my son, you are my daughter, whom I love, and with you I am well pleased. If you can believe that, man, you can live from approval, not for approval. And God even helps us with that part. He even helps us with the belief part, because Galatians goes on to say, because you are his sons, God sent the Spirit of his Son into our hearts. The Spirit who calls out, Abba, Father. That word Abba is the Aramaic word for daddy. Daddy, daddy. So you are no longer a slave. You're no longer a slave to pleasing people. You're no longer a slave to the approval of that person you want to measure up to. You're no longer a slave to whether or not that person criticizes your work. You are God's child. And since you are his child, he has also made you an heir. Not only do you get a status right now, but you get the family inheritance that is yet to come. And how do we receive that? How do we build faith in that? We don't have to do it on our own. The Spirit of God, the same Spirit that empowered Jesus when he walked out of the wilderness, enables us to live from approval instead of for approval. That same Spirit says to you, says to me, this is what God thinks about you. You're his son. You're his daughter who he loves. And with you, I am well pleased. But the question for us is, will we trust our dad? Will we trust our dad? There's an Indian proverb that I heard one time of a grandson who had a dream, and he went to his grandfather to interpret it. And his dream was a battle between two wolves. And he goes to his grandfather, and his grandfather says, son, those two wolves are inside of you. They're inside of you. For our purposes, there's one wolf inside of you that is absolutely the voice of the accuser, the voice that says you can never measure up, the voice that says you must find approval wherever you can find it. And then there's another wolf inside of you. It's the voice of the Father. It's the voice of God who created you before the foundations of the world and wanted to adopt you as his child. And that voice is in you, inviting you to come home. And so the grandson asks his grandfather, well, which wolf wins the war? His grandfather says, the one you feed. The one you feed. So the question for us is, which voice will we listen to? Will we listen to the accuser who will always tell us that we cannot belong, who will always drive us to seek approval from places outside of God, or will we listen to the voice of our Father who says, I paid a price for you. You are my son. You are my daughter. And I want you to come home. I want you to receive your adoption. I got a picture this week as I was praying, and I want to share it with you because maybe this will help you lean into the trust that it takes to really receive what God is offering to you. And if it's helpful for you, you can close your eyes. And I want you to imagine that you're in a courtroom. And in this courtroom, there's a trial going on, and it's a hearing for your adoption. It's the final hearing. After this, you will either be adopted or you won't be adopted. And God the Father is on the witness stand. And he is being badgered by an accuser. And that accuser is really trying to sow doubt in you. And the accuser is saying, can you really trust God? Can you, God, what are your intentions for this child? Are you going to stick with them? Are you going to be with them? Or are you going to abandon them like other people in their life have abandoned them? Can they really trust you? And God is on that witness stand. And after the accuser finally silences himself, God responds. But God does not look at the judge when he responds. And he doesn't look at the accuser. He looks right at you, the child, the son, the daughter that he wants to adopt. And he says, do not fear, for I have redeemed you. I have summoned you by name. You are mine. When you pass through the waters, I will be with you. And when you pass through the rivers, they will not sweep over you. When you walk through the fire, you will not be burned. The flames will not set you ablaze, for I am the Lord your God, the Holy One of Israel, your Savior. Since you are precious and honored in my sight, and because I love you, I will give people in exchange for you. I gave my son in exchange for you, nations in exchange for your life. Do not be afraid, for I am with you. Bring my sons from afar and my daughters from the ends of the earth, everyone who is called by my name, whom I created for my glory, whom I formed and made.
Maybe I don't have the strength. Maybe I don't have the faith. You brought me here in 40 years, and I know this trip should take a week. Well, I shed my tears and I shed my blood. I've been held ransom by the flood. Winter steals my songs away. In all of this, I've come undone.
When you walk through the water, I will be with you. When you pass through the river, the waves will not overtake you. When you walk on the fire, the flames, they will not touch you. Mine, yeah, you are mine.
I've been a child, I've been a slave. I've grown bitter and learned to pray. Packed my bags and started back. Cost was just too high to pay.
When you walk through the water, I will be with you. When you pass through the river, the waves will not overtake you. When you walk on the fire, the flames, they will not touch you. You are mine. Yeah, you are mine.
These chains, they fit so comfortably, and this prison door is my safety. Lost inside this fallen frame, oh, what is left but fear and shame.
I will be with you.
If I pass through the river,
waves will not overtake
you. Oh, if I walk on the fire,
flames will not touch you. You are mine. Yeah.
That is good news. That is good news to know that the God who created the universe, the God who created galaxies upon galaxies, that understands all the crazy things that we're seeing in the Hubble telescope, that same God knows you by name, comes to you and says, by name, you are mine. You are mine. If you will receive that, If you will receive that, then there is no need for any other approval in your life. This God says, I paid for your adoption. And the words that I want to speak over you are that you are my son, you are my daughter, who I love. With you, I am well pleased. Terry, you are my son, who I love. With you, I am well pleased. Courtney, you are my daughter, who I love. With you, I am well pleased. Chris, you are my son, who I love. With you, I am well pleased. Can I just tell you, I know that it has been hard work to get to this point in the journey. We've been digging up stuff, even in this hour, digging up and excavating places where we seek approval. But I want you to know that we are going home. We are going home. God has rescued us. He's redeemed us. And these last 3 weeks are really a way for us to say, God, I'm saying yes. I want to receive my adoption. And so I just tell you, man, if you've been working hard and you've been excavating things, this is about to be a great turning point for you. Because I don't know about you, but I hope you'll go with me. It is time to go home. We're going home. Thank you guys for being here. Engage in your groups this week and know that home is right around the corner.